Listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. Oh boy, here we go. More fun and adventures in 2012. And guess what? We're guided by a prayer that helps us to figure out how to move things ahead. And here's the prayer. Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously, experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. So that's the guiding light, week in, week out. Call forth a prayer to fulfill that and to help bring value to your lives. And we're going to do it again today. As we get started in the show, I want to remind you to check out our sponsor, because that helps us keep Advanced Living Radio on the air. And the sponsor is AdvancedLivingComfort.com. So if you go to advanced, that's with a D, livingcomfort.com, you'll find an amazing item that we have our customers calling a Clark Kent clock with superpowers. Yes, a Clark Kent clock with superpowers. And what that means is that when you look at it, it looks like a digital clock. And when you plug it in, it's kind of like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room. It brings this purified energy that lifts the healing vibration, is what doctors report, and people in general are so grateful, because this pure energy, this coherent energy, harmonizes the stress of being in our high-tech electric world with the electropollution, the EMF, the RF, the radio frequency stuff from the cell phones, cell towers, smart meters. Oh my gosh, it's just everywhere, on and on. And this simple little Clark Kent clock with superpowers, oh my gosh, makes a huge improvement. So check out AdvancedLivingComfort.com. And now, coming into today, my gosh, we are in for a treat. We're sorting through, all this stuff. Practically everywhere there's been talk about the 2012 and what does it mean, and are we going to survive, and is it going to be worse than we thought, and could it get any worse than it is already? I mean, just all this stuff going on. Well, take a deep breath. Just let that out, relax, because good news is on the way. And the good news carrier, this messenger, happens to be named Glenn Kamimura. And he's a spiritual healer, and he's a massage therapist, also a visual artist. This is a very creative and loving individual who attended Kent State University, the Pratt Institute, and also graduated from the State University of New York with a degree in art studio. Then in 1987, after being trained to consciously channel things as a member of the Tibetan Foundation that was in Glendale, Arizona, Glenn, discovered he had the ability to channel light through his body for healing purposes. Well, that's kind of nice. And then since then, he's acquired certifications in massage, sports massage, as well as attaining the healing levels of a Reiki master and teacher. Well, on his wonderful, wonderful way through this life of his, there's been some amazing things on his spiritual journey. With his work especially drawn to the Native American traditions of our country, he was gifted and is carrying a non-traditional Native American pipe, which we'll kind of find out what that's about. And then he takes time out, and it can be found at many of the rainbow gatherings that are Native American, pouring water as a focalizer for the Turtle Island Rainbow Tribe Sweat Lodge ceremonies. And among a few of the political activist highlights of Glenn's long life is leading Vietnam anti-war marches in both Washington, D.C., and right up Broadway in Manhattan in New York City in the spring of 1970, in which, get this, there was no violence, no arrest, kind of different than what we're seeing today with the Occupy movement and how things have deteriorated and the responses. So hats off to you, Glenn. And also, he's involved in participated in making what became an Arizona state law protecting artists from bankrupt galleries, and he did this back in 1983, and then got involved in challenging a little-known genocide of 46,000 Iraqi infants and children by the United States government in the months following the first Gulf War in 1991. Whew! Going on as a spiritual healer, and what I love his terminology, urban shaman, Glenn has been witness to numerous healings on both the physical and emotional level for over 23 years. He's taught classes in shamanistic invocational healing at both the Dreamtime Festival in Paonia, Colorado, and a number of summer rainbow gatherings throughout the western United States. And as an artist, Glenn has painted large landscape murals that are the size of 8 feet by 56 feet and others 23 feet by 75 feet. And this happened back in the 1980s in Arizona. And he's presently the founder of a small graphic arts company called Peace Signs. There's a website for that we'll share with you shortly, and which produces and sells colorful and original magnetic stickers for moving vehicles, and some beautiful things on that, so you can decorate your car and send a good message at the same time. And he is back in the studio working towards his first show since the middle 1980s on personal works, which are paintings of people and landscapes and modernistic landscapes. So, folks, he's been around and done a lot of work to prepare himself to help us learn about 2012. So let's welcome Glenn. Hello, Glenn.
Hey, Ken. Well, welcome. Thank you. And thank you for having me on your show. And I'm very thankful and honored to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Thanks for taking time. As we get started, I'm wondering, because we've been hearing about these Mayan prophecies for 2012, the end of their calendar, what would you say are the differences between your views of this 2012 Mayan prophecies, and those presented overall by the popular cultures that in our country, like Hollywood and the mainstream media campaigns.
Okay. Well, first off, I'm definitely not a Mayan calendar expert, and I wouldn't know the difference between a Baktun and a Tzolk'in. But most of us know by now that the Mayan calendar ends on December 21st this year, 2012. And the Mayan elders were quoted many years ago saying that that date means the end of time. In the media and Hollywood, this phrase has been interpreted to mean the world is coming to an end. Okay.
Yeah.
And my views are that what the Mayan elders were trying to convey, and it was lost in translation, of course, a lot of them don't speak English at all. It turns out there's at least 8 different Mayan languages with a lot more dialects on top of that, is that they kept saying it's the end of time, okay? That doesn't mean the end of the world. When you're looking at Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, what they kept trying to convey was a raising of consciousness to mean that all of us need to be operating more and more out of now, which also means that we're becoming more awakened and enlightened, and that's one of the main aspects of coming from that place.
Wow.
Okay, so it does mean an end of linear time. It doesn't mean the end of the world at all. It's simply they kept trying to convey we're going from what, if you have a map of the dimensions to help you out and make you feel a little safer, we're going from the third into the fourth into the fifth dimension. And especially when you reach the fifth dimension and even some parts of the upper fourth dimension, linear time breaks down and our consciousness just sort of dissolves into being in the now. And I believe that's what the Mayan elders have been saying all along.
Ah, okay.
So no end of the world at all. And
wow.
And some of them have been getting quoted recently in the media as saying just that. We never meant the end of the world.
Whew. Okay. All right, time for another one of those deep breaths. Wow, folks. It's like, that's a relief.
Okay.
We can certainly like that. And it's so interesting when you bring that up because it calls to mind how there's been this type of thing in different phases of our human history when people were sure that at one point in time, I mean, it was all, my gosh, the sun, they knew it was wonderful, and then it would be up for a while and then disappear, and they were frightened because the sun brought all this life and this warmth and this growth of things, and then regularly the thing disappeared, and people were scared, is it coming back? And
oh,
so
sure.
We had that go on, and then there was the part about, well, the world is actually flat. That was for certain. And then it was, well, it is actually those flat edges. We can kind of round them off a little and maybe a lot. And then there was stuff going on about, well, the Earth is the center of the universe, which turns out, no, but I mean, people were hanging on to that for dear life, and you know, there was even some religious folks that thought if you didn't feel that, then you were probably a candidate for the early death syndrome to help you leave the planet because you disagreed. My gosh, I'm sure they'd be very popular with some of the modern personal rights violations that are going on in our country. But more back to what you're saying is. Here's another change that's going to be coming, and it's not a terrible thing, but it is a shift in our perception of what's going on, and not only that, but who knows how dramatic this change can be in terms of going into other dimensions. So how did you come by your personal picture of 2012?
Well, Ken, once I knew that the Mayan elders really meant going from linear time to now time, then everything else seemed to fall into place. My concepts have to do with bringing together a lot of my experiences with channeling, both doing it myself and listening to other people channel, and reading lots and lots of books and just knowing that the planet's not going to go, into some sort of catastrophic one day and end of everything. Okay, and just lots and lots of experience with listening to lots of people. Can I read you one thing out of a book I just love?
Oh, sure.
This is from Diana Yawahu, Voices of Our Ancestors. She is from a great medicine person lineage that goes back 2,800 years. Okay, and this is at the very end of chapter one, and she says, we have been in the ninth and final stage of purification, the ninth hell world following the 13 heavens. And in this time, the fifth generation, living in a natural way, is keeping the sacred precepts, dreaming of beauty. The fire is rekindled on Earth's holy places. The song of peaceful remembrance goes forth. A new day is dawning. The new cycle of 13 heavens began August 30th, 1987, 13 days after the fifth world ended. Now I pray that each one of you may perceive the vision of peace and have the will and courage and compassion to manifest it. And may you be called forth as a peacekeeper, turning aside anger, shame, blame, and calling forth harmony and joy for all relations. That doesn't sound like a catastrophic end to the world to me.
No. No, but by golly, if you participate in modern life in America, which is built on drama, which rhymes with trauma, you know, this has become a way of life. Whether it's in sports, whether it's in relationships, whether it's in government, whether it's within religion, I mean, it's just like, okay, what are we going to have today? Well, drama everywhere, and it'll be intense, and it'll be a mess, and we'll go crazy, and it'll get you excited and scared out of your wits. Doesn't that sound like fun? And so it's like, wait a minute. Could you give us those few words about the things that we're calling forth that she writes about instead of drama and trauma?
Sure. We were supposed to be in the drama and the trauma for the last 6,000 to 10,000 years. What I see and what I've observed, and especially, I guess I believe in Sri Yukeshwar, who was Yogananda's spiritual teacher,
yeah,
in what's called a yuga. Uh-huh. Of all these different ages, okay?
Yes.
And to me, each one of these ages is a game board. And it's a foundation for just a general way that we're going to learn our lessons. I guess I would have to say I really believe in reincarnation, that we keep inserting ourselves in these different lifetimes and experiencing things and all through all these different lifetimes and all these different ways all over the world and also possibly in other worlds. And it's sort of like this game that I see where we forget that we're God presence and we insert ourselves into a lifetime on the physical planes and the physical world, and we're experiencing things in a form of separation of sort of forgetting that we know that we're God presence, everything is God presence, okay? So in terms of these yugas, the last 6,000 to 10,000 years has been what I term negative masculine. And we were supposed to be learning a lot of our lessons possibly through, like, what not to do a lot of times. And there was a lot of war and a lot of trauma. And the men seemed to, like, run almost everything, okay?
Yeah.
So what this new age is about and what this 2012 is about, it's actually started, like, almost a century ago with Helena Blavatsky and Alice Bailey channeling Dwal Kool. And lots of others is there's these definite ages where the game board is pulled up, and now the rules have all changed. Okay, so we were in this negative masculine. We're learning everything through lots of war, lots of trauma, lots of suffering. Okay, suffering actually sort of morphed into and transmuted into good things a lot of times, to what would be positive feminine. And I don't remember anywhere on this planet that where we've been Homo sapiens that there's actually been much positive feminine at all. The age before this negative masculine, more than 6,000 to 10,000 years ago, was actually negative feminine. And the women were actually in charge of things a lot and ran roughshod over the men, just like the men seem to have run roughshod in general over the women the last 6,000 to 10,000 years. So we're going into this positive feminine. That's what this means. And positive feminine, to me, the foundation of all of it is looking to see where we can give to one another and support one another and love one another instead of seeing how much we can take from one another.
Wow. Wow. Now, Glenn, to me, this is bringing up some really exciting contemplation. Many times that I've observed that people's interactions, someone would be talking about their marriage, the man talking about a marriage or interaction with a female, and especially in a marital circumstance, many times the men mentioned that if they wanted a nice life, the path was very simple, was do whatever it took to make mama happy. And of course, that doesn't sound to me like two people sitting down and working things out so that both folks are getting their needs met. It was just sort of like as you were talking about some level of this negative feminine. And this, some of this coming of the women's rights and the feminism. And certainly I like the idea of women having more rights. That is definitely in order. How about this, where now we could be looking possibly, am I hearing correctly, to a time where the women would be coming from a much kinder, more nurturing place and bringing out the best in men and women in their interactions with each other.
Yeah, and how about men coming from a nurturing place, bringing up to the surface their own inner feminine in a very positive way? Okay, getting rid of this fear that we have for one another on a subconscious level. Okay, all violence comes from fear. If you're operating from love, there can never be any violence. Okay, all violence is always a projection of fear, and fear is always where the ego is operating. So if we're dissolving these fearful energies of our ego, I'm not saying get rid of it. I'm saying, like, just put it back in its rightful place and give it its right job, is to look out for us and to protect us, but not project that fear onto others anymore, then we would get much more peaceful fast, I believe.
Okay.
And that is one of the aspects of getting much more awakened.
Okay, well, so I guess as we talk about this, you're seeing then this 2012 actually leading to positive changes. Are there any other things that is, as individuals living in this time, that we can be looking out for or being aware of?
Well, I would say that Foster Gamble, talking, him and his wife, I think her name is Kimberly,
yes,
and they've put out this great movie, Thrive. He said a couple weeks ago that the number one thing we ought to be focusing on is being in our true purpose. And so in making sure that we really know what our true purpose is now and doing everything we possibly can to be operating from that place. So for me, it's doing art and healing. So I'm doing everything I can to get back into my artwork, you know, and continue with my healing practice further. And for me personally, it's actually getting a little further away from all the politics, but I'd like to talk about that a little bit, you know, in a few minutes, because I still feel that politics is important to help with these to changes that are going on, as we obviously see everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. So the other thing is to be operating in a place of acceptance and gratitude. Okay, so again, whenever something negative happens and you're feeling down and you're getting angry and you're getting upset, can you always keep catching yourself and refocusing onto accepting what is going on in the world and in your life right now, and then feeling grateful that you're still here and grateful for anything in your life? Even if it's a little negative, we're still learning our lessons through some adverse things going on in our lives. It's accepting that. You don't have to like it. You don't have to love it. Just accepting it and being grateful, you know, for we're here on this earth plane, and it's a beautiful place to be.
Okay. Okay, well, that's important. I like that. And with that theme in mind, would you help us to know, because climate change, different things, possible reversal of the magnetic poles of the planet. What do you see as the possibilities that many of these adverse Earth changes could still come about this year?
Okay, well, to me personally, this is, again, is my own view, you know, viewpoint on some things. The Earth is a live spiritual being, okay? And another way of looking at going from this negative masculine age right into this positive feminine age is she's giving birth to this new age, okay? And, you know, there's a realistic possibility that if we really don't change our ways, humanity, we could be a cancer just killing her. Just environmentally, okay, if we really don't get our act together. And I don't need to go into a lot of details on that. We need to be environmentally much more conscious of what we're doing with the planet. And again, that's taking so much from her and hardly giving back to her. Okay? So I really can't speak in terms of anything specific of adverse Earth changes. It appears as if, you know, earthquakes, there's been a lot more of them, you know, lately. When you look at the Red Cross statistics, that'll back that up.
Yeah.
But in terms of the Earth flipping on its axis, not really. It wobbles. You know, there's charts and graphs that show it wobbling a lot, and then it wobbles a little less. There may have been in the past the Earth shifting on its axis. I don't think it rotated in one day. It might have taken years for it to do it. That really could create some adverse conditions, but I'm not going to say that's going to happen on December 21st. Okay. There's other things about sunspots that could, you know, create such a magnetic field that it would make the Earth turn on its axis. Again, I don't see that, I guess, wiping out an awful lot of humanity at all. And I don't see it happening like in one day.
Ah.
And I could be wrong. I just have a much more positive outlook that the Earth really cares about us. She really loves us, and she doesn't want to see a lot of people die at once.
Okay, well, I gotta like that attitude.
Yeah, I would also recommend a book by Kiara Windrider called I believe it's Year One. And he talks a lot about different cosmic energies coming to the Earth, and again, how they're all converging in this 2012 year, and about possibilities of maybes, okay? He doesn't say in that book either, oh, this is definitely going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, this is good. I know we're dealing with things on a level of, there's the Earth, but there's interactions in this vast universe and the galaxy and the rest of the solar system. I mean, this stuff is still not well understood, but a lot's going on outside of our planet. I mean, this massive entire universe, as a matter of fact, it's like a big thing happening, and it's all in motion. So there's influences, but I like the idea, especially of coming into this new age of this new, in what is it, in the Indian terms or Vedic terms, the yuga, a new energy, and then this positive feminine, and so, oh boy, I think it's
the positive feminine is everything about we are all cooperating with each other. Okay, the Palladian, the slang term for them by the Native Americans is the seven dancers. It's we're going through life as a dance. What would it be like if you were playing more and you were dancing more in that kind of joy?
Mm.
Okay? Instead of being in the state of fear and I've you know, got to go shoot my neighbor because they're doing something to me, the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
Okay? And knowing that everything in the universe is one, including all the people you don't like, they're also another aspect of yourself. Sometimes you just don't want to see about yourself. Okay, there are all lessons out there to teach us something.
Yeah.
Okay, so,
yeah,
cooperation, teamwork is all about the positive feminine. Lots of teamwork.
Ah, okay.
No one person on top telling everybody what to do.
Ah.
On top of the pyramid, you know, you need to do this and you need to do that. very militaristic, real good way to run a war and get armies to go shoot and kill people, but it's not going to work in the future.
So we hear about this term of consensus decision making, where everyone's involved in a community and making a decision that affects those. Is that an example?
Yes. Real democracy, politically, I don't believe we're operating out of a democracy anymore.
Very interesting.
Yeah, getting back to what the true meaning of democracy is. It takes a long time to have councils and have lots of people come to a, decision about things.
Yeah.
You know, it takes some real time and patience to do that.
Exactly. And so we haven't really practiced that. It's been more of this autocratic, or this ruler, or this president, or this dictator, someone saying, okay, this is how it's going to be. Like it? Great. You get to live. Don't like it? Okay. Well, you can just see how well you breathe underground. And that's pretty nice. And a bit of a, like, okay, this is going to take some practice. Is there places we can look at? Maybe in Native American, maybe other places, about this way of people being in a council, taking time to work through people's thoughts and feelings and fears and coming to a decision that everyone's aligned behind?
Yeah, and I also feel we can use technology in the future to do a whole lot of that using computers in some way. Don't tell me, I don't know the specifics of it, but I think we can use technology for that too. We've got chat rooms, we've got the social networks. I think a lot of that are all for, like, some really good reasons that we can use technology. Because when you're talking about this many people trying to counsel to make decisions, that might be difficult at times. But if you're talking about using computers and social technology to do it, I think there's a way that can be worked out.
Wow. So. And do you have... summing all this up, any prediction for December 21st of 2012?
Yeah, I think it's going to be another Y2K event. What I see in terms of 2012 is like a visual of a dartboard on a wall, okay? And 2012 is the center. And if you can just hit the dartboard, you're in. Okay, so if we're looking at the number one most important thing to me about 2012 is the more and more people being on this spiritual path and dissolving the power that their ego has over them. Again, not getting rid of your ego, but dissolving the power that it has, and transmuting your whole life and going from your head into your heart and body awareness. And basically, that's some of the aspects of what it takes to be a fully awakened person. That'll keep happening more and more and more to many more people. I've personally sat done satsang intensives with a whole bunch of them, people like Adyashanti. Some of them you've heard, and some of you haven't. Adyashanti to Annette Knopp, Carl Renz to Jeannie Zandi, Stephen Kearney to Neelam, Pamela Wilson to Mitch Rosacker to Amber Terrell. There's many, many more of them. People are just waking up, okay, and they're just leaving their ego behind, not getting rid of it, but disempowering it. And it's just like, so if you hit that dartboard and it started well over a century ago with more people waking up, and it'll continue into the future, more and more people waking up, and this will raise the consciousness of the entire planet. And hopefully it'll eventually bring world peace. Eventually. I'm not going to tell you when. It could be 5 years. It could be 500. So I don't want to make any kind of specific predictions. I'm not good at that anyway.
Yeah. Well, we could certainly do with even just a little improvement. You'd think like having war was, well, you know, it's good for someone's economy. I mean, it besides a few... 100 million people that have had to die, it sure helped the profit picture for some weapons makers and different governments and politicians and bankers and corporations. But it's such a small number of people. I'd like to see something happening that actually is good for a larger number of folks. So I'm liking even just any movement in that direction. Now,
and I believe, Ken, that you can really see it all the time on TV and on Google and in the news, that there are more and more organizations that are coming into play that are simply helping people in need all over the world. Whenever there's a catastrophe like a tsunami, an earthquake, it's literally days. There's like, you know, all this food and tents and people flying on planes and Doctors Without Borders flying in and doing everything they can. Now, can we do that beyond just helping in terms of some sort of physical earth-based catastrophe? And can we start to do more and more of that in a political way and in an economic way?
Yeah.
And I believe that's where it's going to go soon.
Ah, excellent. Well, now you mentioned, of course, that you work as a spiritual healer, and of course, I'm kind of curious because you mentioned also being a shaman. So how does this 2012 play in for you? And is there some difference between you as a spiritual healer and a shaman? Would you help out with that?
Okay, well, first, what has continued to happen, again, with this sort of like on the dartboard, is that for years, my personal ability to bring in more light for the intent of healing others keeps getting better, more light, more healing, whatever. It just gets easier for that to happen, okay? And I, you know, have to keep centered on my own belief that it's possible. I can't do it all the time. I don't know if any of the listeners out there ever heard of John of God. If they go to John of God Brazil on the web, you'll see amazing miracles this guy's been doing, people flying in from all over the world for many, many years, and a lot of people getting healed. But I also know of some people that went to Brazil, and he said to them, "I'm sorry, I can't help you." And most people that go to him, they're on crutches, they're in wheelchairs. I've seen pictures of a chapel down there in his town in which it's filled to the ceiling with crutches and wheelchairs that people have just thrown away after he's done a healing on them. He's a trance channel. So he's sort of like my idol. You know, I'm not quite operating on his level. But it just gets easier for what I would consider, you know, something outside of what science can understand, that people can heal much more easily on an emotional and a physical level. So the other half of your question, I can't remember exactly what it was. What was that again?
Sure, just about if there's some difference we should understand, spiritual healer versus shaman.
Yeah. So the only difference that I can make out is that shamans tend to also be a little more earth-based. Okay? They're a little more in tune with the earth and a little more connected to the earth. And that, I think, is about one of the main differences. The other thing is that there's usually a wounding that happens. And it also happens to a lot of spiritual healers, but I don't know if it happens to all of them. And you go through a process of, through healing yourself, you also learn to heal others and become a shaman, and that's one of the main aspects. And then this other aspect about, like, I'm carrying this non-traditional Native American pipe, just one little correction. The Rainbow Gatherings are not Native American gatherings.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
They're hippies, and we allow all types of spiritual paths, all kinds of religions. Everything is welcome there, okay, as long as no one's trying to force anybody to do anything that they don't want to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, Rainbow Gatherings are not Native American. I am doing sweat lodges, and I used to do medicine wheel ceremonies there. And I'm also not a Native American.
Okay.
Okay, but I am carrying this very legitimate pipe. I'll give you a little story about that in a few moments. So, these four directions that some people may have heard the term, and they have everything to do with Native American spiritual ways, not as much their culture. These four directions I had an interaction with them many years ago in which they became very, very real as spiritual beings that were guardians for the Earth, and they were helping her.
Mm.
Again, I'm talking about the Earth as a live being to me.
Yeah.
Okay? These four directions are spiritual beings. Some listeners may have heard of angels and ascended masters. They're very much like that, operating in a higher dimension, very, very powerful. And they're here always to help the Earth and help everything on the Earth. So that's the difference, is an interaction more with the Earth. So in a Native American way, I've had this personal interaction with what I believe are real spiritual beings called the Four Directions, and a little more interaction with the Earth as a personal being that I'm sometimes in communication with than other people might be, and that's very shamanistic. Spiritual healers, a shaman is a spiritual healer. It's just these little extra things. I shouldn't say little, but, you know, they're important.
Sure, absolutely.
One more thing about this woundedness. Many years ago, Rosalind Berryer, who's a world-class spiritual healer of her generation for many, many years, she did a study, helped a bunch of scientists do a research study on these aspects of what it is to be a spiritual healer. I believe, if I remember right, it was University of California, Santa Barbara. And they found that by the age of 8, every spiritual healer had a great wounding and were traumatized by the age of 8. Okay,
So they got it out of the way early. They didn't have to wait around for 30 years.
Yeah, no, it was by the age of 8. But then it's like, how long does it take to heal enough that you can become an effective spiritual healer? Or a shaman yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
How long is that?
For me, it's been a little too long. Is that a judgment?
Okay, so there's not like one amount of time for that it takes a wounded healer to heal. A different path that we all go on in some way. Well,
yep.
Well, this is pretty good.
Yep, and I can refer everyone out there to another book. Like I said, I've read a lot of books called Dreamtime in Inner Space, The World of the Shaman by Holger Kallweit. Okay, and he went all over the world and interviewed lots and lots of shamans and found similarities amongst all of them.
Mm.
Dreamtime in Inner Space, The World of the Shaman by Holger Kallweit.
Okay.
Shambhala Press.
All right. Well,
okay.
Pretty good. Anything else you want to share about this Rainbow Gatherings, the Turtle Island Rainbow Tribe?
Sure. Thank you. We've been gathering for about almost 40 years now, and in five words, it's hippies partying in the woods.
Oh.
Okay. The U.S. government does not like us, or especially the Forest Service. Some aspects of them don't like us. But we've been doing this for about 40 years now. Have people coming in from all over the country, all over North and South America, some from Europe, and we pick a spot in the middle of the summer and camp out and cook a lot of food for each other. Money is not allowed at all. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's that supportive giving thing in practice. You're always seeing what you can give to others. Okay, it's a really good time. Drum circles going on all night long. We have a dinner circle where lots of the different kitchens cook up stuff for people, and you go to dinner and you get some food. But you don't have to do that throughout the night. They're cooking all sorts of things, and you just go walk around and see what you can find. And you get the right timing.
Yeah.
It's everything. We've got Jesus freaks there, it just runs the gamut. All sorts of different kitchens. I'm at a loss for words. Hare Krishnas show up, cook some great meals, and do lots of prayer ceremonies. And so I started out helping to run the medical unit. That we could not have a rainbow gathering without people feeling safe that they were taken care of. We'd have doctors and nurses and EMTs and massage therapists and acupuncturists and spiritual spiritual healers like myself all come in and work out of this unit. And I helped to run that for a number of years, and now I've gravitated away from that and focused on doing, first I was doing medicine wheel ceremonies, and now I'm building sweat lodges. We have to tear everything down and clean it up and make it look like no one was there in about a month.
Okay.
And it peaks for about a 1 to 2 weeks, and then right in the middle of the summer, on July 4th, we take all the energy of all the good things we're doing with each other and putting it out and making a big circle and doing a prayer of peace to the world, always on July 4th.
Ah, sounds wonderful.
Yeah, so...
And find out more about these rainbow gatherings?
Just go to www.welcomehome, that's one word, no spaces, .org.
Welcomehome.org. Okay. Now, you mentioned earlier about this the political activism. I mean, late in the marches, Vietnam War stuff in Washington and down the main streets in New York City.
I'm
just wondering what you up to now with that.
Okay. Before I get into that, Ken, I didn't answer the second half of your question. Turtle on Rainbow Tribe is the space that I've been personally creating to hold these ceremonies in.
Oh.
And I typically do it in partnership with other people at the gathering. And the Rainbows really, really love these ceremonies.
Okay.
So that's what Turtle on Rainbow Tribe is about. And I'd like one day to possibly have it recognized by the other Native American tribes as a new tribe. Again, I'm not a Native American. I'm not culturally a Native American. I'm a rainbow. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm following the path of the four directions, but I am carrying this pipe that is a legitimate rainbow, you know, it's a legitimate pipe, but again, it's non-traditional since what I'm doing is non-traditional, it's new.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel as if I'm helping to what Black Elk and Black Elk Speaks talks about is healing the sacred hoop that was broken, that created this 500 years of darkness for the Native Americans, that creating a new tribe would help to heal that sacred hoop energy, to start accepting some things new into the Native American ways.
Yeah, okay.
So I respect them totally. Okay, I try to run a very, very respectful kind of sweat lodge, but some of the stuff I'm doing is very new. So that's why it's non-traditional.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So now getting to the other question about the political activism, besides that anti-war march I led, and I also shut down the school I was attending, Pratt Institute, and that was with the approval of the administration. Everything I did was with everyone's, you know. Let's see, what else? Well, yeah, in about 1983, I saw that artists were not getting treated right in the state of Arizona, and I just had enough energy, and I had all these wonderful synchronicities with people helping me that had a lot of political influence right up to the state legislature and the governor's office, that I couldn't have done this without it, and I was instrumental in creating a law that protected artists from bankrupt galleries.
And then
this other thing, which is really the last political activist event I did, was in 1991 when I discovered right after the war that all these infants and children were dying like flies. What the United States government had done was bomb 3 out of the 4 water treatment plants in Iraq during the Gulf War. What was that, about 5 days or something, that war?
Yeah.
And they bombed 3 out of the 4 water treatment plants, so very simply, there wasn't any clean water to be had. And then they put the embargo on all the people of Iraq, so they couldn't get them any decent food, and the medical supplies ran out. So what you had was about 46,000 infants and Iraqi children dying like flies in the arms of their parents. And very few people know about this. I want to read you this, because this is going to stick in my craw, I think, for the rest of my life. And this is from the New England Journal of Medicine, 1992. And the article title is Effect of the Gulf War on Infant and Child Mortality in Iraq. And I'm just going to read you one short paragraph out of the abstract in the beginning. Conclusions. Okay, these results provide strong evidence that the Gulf War and trade sanctions caused a threefold increase in mortality among Iraqi children under 5 years of age. We estimate that in excess of more than 46,900 children died between January and August of 1991. Okay, so I formed a committee, and we went to liberal Democrats here in Colorado and tried to get them to do something about this, and they just didn't want to do anything.
Yeah.
We gave them all the proof that they needed. It's like, we're killing all these children here. Okay, can you please, you don't have to end the entire embargo, but you need to get medical supplies and food to these children. And they just didn't want to lift a pinky.
Yeah, different agendas.
Different agendas.
And that's, to me, the part that is so important in terms of being willing to persist, knowing that people's focus of attention, there's so much going on that could be improved. There's so many things going on that we would like to have a cease and desist of, that it's like aligning people behind a particular cause sometimes is easy, other times it takes a lot of work. So I'm just glad that you're persistent. One of the things as we're getting down to towards the end here of our wonderful time together, I would like to make sure people have a way to reach you and check in and, you know, share a little bit about what they can do in terms of turning to you for some help or guidance or shamanistic support, all that stuff.
Thanks, Kim. Well, I can be reached at my email address, Kamamura, Kamamura, at BOD, that's BOD, like the first three letters in the word body, at BOD.net, Kamamura at BOD.net. And my phone number, and I'd love to talk to people if they have any more questions about anything, is 720-389-4884.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good.
So.
And then there's some stuff that people would come to you in person to receive, and can you do things at a distance, someone calling in for distance healing?
Yeah. My energetic healings, there's a number of different kinds, and I don't want to get into the details. It involves something really short and sweet that may be 10 to 20 minutes, or maybe involves something much more extensive in terms of really getting into their subconscious and seeing what's going on there. And that'll be taking, you know, anywhere from 1 to 2 hours, and that can all be done over the phone. Very successfully and effectively.
Okay, good. And then people can get more details. And I guess right now you do have a website for the peace stickers that you're making, right?
Yep, and that's there's no number on the site right now to reach me, but you can definitely order them off the site, and it's peace signs. That's one word, plural, PEACESIGNS, one word, .biz.
Okay.
.biz. And you can see all about them on that website.
Yeah, so people could use that phone number again. Would you share that 720 phone number?
Yep, 720-389-4884.
Okay, good. And so people could call about that, and that way... as you're talking about focusing a positive intention, I'm guessing that the peace signs, that's one of the intents of those. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. All you got to do is look at them. It's going to make you feel really good. They're really bright and colorful. I've got lots more designs that haven't been printed yet, really cool ones. I've got a yin-yang peace sign. I've already done a smiley face peace sign. It's all positive.
Okay.
Very, very positive stickers. Very, very, you know, just makes people feel really good just to see them.
Ah.
So then that's the intent.
Yeah, and then you put it on your car, so when you're out driving, other people are starting to feel good.
Yeah.
My God,
yep.
We might have to deal with an end-to-road rage soon then. Boy, and there'll be people talking about, geez, I was about to get really upset, and then one of Glenn's peace signs came by, and I lost my anger. Ah! Well, Glenn, I just want to say thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It is just a thrill and a delight to get a more optimistic look and this deeper understanding of what the end of time, the end of keeping track of our lives in this linear fashion and actually expanding and this being in the now, just all these things you're bringing forth. So thank you so much. Just really want to wish you absolute success in your work and just you keep on, my friend.
And thank you, Ken, for having this show. I understand you've been doing it for 6 years now, so it's a wonderful gift to the world to have this show also.
Well, I just appreciate this opportunity and do my best to help us focus on creating better lives. So
can I wrap up with one quote from somebody who was an Episcopalian priest who helped ferry Jews across the English Channel at the end of World War II?
Hopefully there's enough time because we got to be
quick about
this.
It's very short. It's very short. Humility does not mean thinking less of yourself than other people, nor does it mean having a low opinion of your gifts. It means freedom from thinking about yourself at all.
Ah, perfect. Well, Glenn, thank you. Until we meet again, God bless, and goodbye for now. Let go and let God. Let go.